Welcome to WisePod. Andalusia Farm, the home of Flannery O'Connor, is pleased to connect you with all manner of business happening here. As Flannery said, you can get to Milledgeville by bus and buzzard. And now, via WisePod. Enjoy.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for coming out today. My name's Elizabeth Wiley. I'm the director here at Andalusia Farm, the nonprofit that owns and manages this beautiful property. I wanted to welcome you to the final of our February 4 series dealing with the violent Barrett Way. If y'all aren't receiving these cards in the mail, please sign up at the front. We'll get you in our database. Also, if you aren't receiving our emails, please add your email and we'll send you our quarterly e-news down on the farm that will fill you in what's going on. Just so you know, all these programs are podcasts, so if somebody is wandering around outside and there's not a spot for them, they can hear the program on Andalusia WisePod. I have to offer a mea culpa. We don't have a moonshiner here today in person. We have one on film. I talked to a number of moonshiners who didn't want to be identified.
So did I.
And some others in the legal trade, distillers who had schedule conflicts and couldn't make it. So we have a wonderful short film. It's a 12-minute film featuring a moonshiner who gives you some flavor of what that whole industry was like. And certainly we're thinking about the time period when Flannery O'Connor set her story, The Violent Barrett Way. Also, just to let you know, after the program, we'll have some Q&A, and we'll continue that and carry it on into a reception afterwards. We are serving moonshine cocktails, so anyone who's over 21 and would like to try some moonshine, head out to the front porch, and we have a cocktail we'll be offering. There's also water and tea and coffee and some snacks.
And something else that I'll tell you about.
Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Candace Dyer. Candace is a freelance writer who lives in White County, Georgia. She writes regularly for Atlanta Magazine, PaceMagazine.com, as well as Men's Journal, Garden and Gun, and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Candace reviews books for Arts ATL, and she is author of Street Singers, Soul Shakers, and Rebels with a Cause, Music from Macon. Sometimes called the Appalachia Sage, Candace's roots are in the North Georgia Mountains, home to some of the state's most notorious moonshine operations. She agreed to participate in today's program, and I'm so grateful that she did. So please join me in welcoming Candace Dyer.
Let me open by saying, first of all, we were expecting this to be more of a Q&A with me talking to a moonshiner, and that's what I was preparing for, so I've tried to prepare something else instead. And I hope I can buy your love with this. Inside this sack for old-timey grits, stone ground grits, mill ground grits, I have a mason jar. This is the real stuff. This is not the pansy-ass stuff that you get at a liquor store that's labeled moonshine. This is illegal, and it's contraband, and I broke the law just buying it and then transporting it here. Like an old-time, like my ancestors, those old-time bootleggers. We hauled ass down the highway with a mason jar in the car. And I even brought Dixie cups. So if anyone has a hearty enough liver to handle this, I'm happy to pour it for you. Or if you want to clean your radiator or anything like that, it's good for that too. So anyway, I'm like Sean Spicer. I need my props. So I brought some real shine with me. As far as this book goes, this being Flannery O'Connor, there's the obligatory religious fanatic from the get-go. And the opening scene shows that this prophet is making his living by making and selling moonshine. And neither O'Connor nor her character seem particularly conflicted by that. And that tracks with my experience. I grew up in the mountains of Northeast Georgia. I'm an umpteenth generation hillbilly. And I grew up in a dry county. And I come from a long line of Baptist preachers and bootleggers. And Will Rogers famously said, "Southerners will drink wet and vote dry so long as any citizen can stagger to the polls." So I grew up with some really schizoid attitudes surrounding alcohol in general and moonshine in particular. Alcohol was and is still stigmatized, but moonshine is a matter of heritage, a family tradition, an honest and honorable way for poor folks to make a living. There's no shame in moonshine. Making it, selling it, running it, drinking it, there's no shame in it. But you can't have a glass of wine with your dinner. My father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and several uncles and great-uncles all worked stills. This was just a way of life. And one day, years ago, my father, the moonshiner, who is also a Baptist teetotaler, saw me drinking a beer, and he freaked out and wouldn't speak to me for 2 days. And I said, "Really? You made this stuff, but you're giving me grief about a Miller Lite?" And he said, "They're not the same." And I said, "No, they aren't the same." That's my point. We were coming at it from two different angles. He is from Lumpkin County, which actually holds the national record for the most revenuers murdered in pursuit of moonshiners. Wow. And this is a bragging point, a point of pride for the county. They take great pride in this. And my dad went to school with a moonshiner who killed a fed by blowing up his car. So this stuff was very real and not that long ago. And one of the stills that my dad worked was a 200-gallon one. And when it was busted, it was deemed to be the largest copper still in Lumpkin County history. And my aunt proudly clipped the newspaper article out of the paper to save. She took pride in that. So I decided to interview my laconic and very private father, who is a teetotaling Baptist, about what makes good white lightning. And I wanted to see just how uncomfortable I can make him with my questions. And he basically, once he got rolling, he just rattled off random facts. And I tried to organize them. And you start with location, location, location. You want a creek that runs north to south, not east to west. And nobody can explain exactly why. It's one of those things like planning by the signs. You don't know why it works. You just know it works. You don't want to make your moonshine in an east to west creek. And it has to be water that's being really aerated by moving over rocks, by moving over shoals. You don't want any moss or algae in the water. You want fast-moving water. You want to build the furnace out of red clay because it holds heat evenly. And you want your fire to go up around the sides of your copper kettle, for lack of a better word. You don't want the fire to be just concentrated at the bottom because that will scorch your product and it'll taste funny. And you use copper because it doesn't rust, and rusted metal will make some really murky whiskey that you don't want to drink. And of course, you probably know this, it should be set in a thicket of ivy or preferably mountain laurel. And you put a little roof over the still and you cover that with green felt so that it blends in with the thicket and can't be spotted from a plane. And these people are painstaking in what they do for secrecy. If you chop the wood nearby, you cover those stumps with a rock so that these bare stumps can't be seen from a plane. Mm-hmm. And you do most of this at night, so you need a good flashlight or torch or whatever. And even if you're parking a car on the side of the road and you're carrying your supplies up a bank, you bring a piece of lumber to walk on so that you won't leave footprints on the bank. I mean, these guys thought of everything. On the trail leading to the still, you leave a $5 bill. When you return the following day or night and that bill is gone, you'll know your still has been discovered. I thought that was especially wily. Just leave some cash there, and if that's missing, somebody's been there. You can also use a mule to haul your supplies, and my dad actually did this. And mules actually function a little bit like guard dogs in that they'll start braying and making a racket when they see people coming. So there was actually, this was not in North Georgia, this was in Alabama, but I thought it was funny. A mule was actually put on trial in Alabama, found guilty, and sentenced to a life of hard labor on a deputy's farm. That's a little bit of moonshine lore that, you know, but my dad said, yeah, people use mules all the time, you know. So, a grotesque talisman in moonshine culture is the bone from a raccoon's penis. It is inserted into that last stretch of tubing, and it directs the flow of the distilled whiskey. It keeps the whiskey from dribbling down the side of the container. And hey, we're at Flannery O'Connor's place, but I've got to get Southern Gothic, okay? there was a famous moonshiner named Popcorn Sutton, who many of you probably have heard of, who kept that kind of bone in his hat band and occasionally used it as a toothpick. Now, my father wanted it made clarified that he did not do this. So when the stuff is flowing out of that final stretch of tubing, you light it with a match, and if it burns blue, and it's the most beautiful color of blue, it's good stuff. And you seal it up really tight in a mason jar, and you shake the jar, and you want it to foam. If it's strong, it foams. You want bubbles, and that's what they call holding a bead. If there are no bubbles, you have a really weak product. The best car for hauling it was a 1940 Ford. My dad stashed some of his product in a 1934 Ford, and he pointed out this was the same car that Bonnie and Clyde were killed in. But he ran into a problem because he couldn't get it to crank, so he left the car in place overnight, and when he returned, the feds had smashed most of the jars. There was just broken glass everywhere. But they had buried a few of the jars in the creek bank. And my eagle-eyed great uncle saw that the dirt had been disturbed, and he knew something was up, and he found these jars. So he salvaged most of it. But flash forward decades later, as a child, I happened to find it in this spot, a jar of moonshine, and I opened it and it smelled like rubbing alcohol. I was just a little girl. So yeah, I didn't partake of it. Later on, I might have, but anyway, my father finally got disillusioned with the whiskey business because he invested $40 in some sugar, and this was money he had earned the hard way working at a sawmill, and that batch just turned out bad, and he couldn't sell it, so he was out $40. And he decided that enlisting in the Marine Corps and going to Vietnam would be easier than moonshining, which is really hard work. And he said, I also wanted to sleep at night and not worry about going to prison. And in his era, half a gallon cost $10. I paid $25 for this. So it hasn't really gone up that much. He was doing this in the late 50s. That's my experience with moonshine. I grew up with it just sort of all around me, and I've been drunk on it. I don't recommend it. I'm not gonna have any. Y'all don't wanna see me on it. Y'all don't wanna see it. I don't wanna be it. but I'm happy to pour for anybody who wants to try it. It should be good stuff. I trust the maker.
Okay.
I think it burns blue and bubbles and all that.
I think this would be a good time to watch the
And then we'll have some Q&A connected
back to the story. We're sitting here right now in Sugar Mill Campground. We used to live probably a quarter mile up here beside the highway. And my dad made moonshine, but he made it over on the side of Lake Burton, one of the streams. I remember my dad coming in one night about 1 o'clock in the morning and beating on the door, and Nanny opened the door, and he said, don't turn the light on, they're right behind me. Well, my dad said when he went up there to start working that still that night, he reached over and pulled a canvas off of the jars, because they put a canvas on to keep them dry. He reached up and pulled that canvas out, and that man come out with a hand and said, I got you, son of a bitch. He says, you ain't got shit. Oh, he hit the road, and he was quick. He didn't weigh 100 pounds. He was quick. He was over yonder on Burton Mountain, 2 miles back that way, and we lived at 1 mile back that way. He had to run 3 miles around the side of the lake with the lake down and outrun them, son of a bitch. And he come back in there and told Nanny, said, don't open the doors, don't turn the lights on, they're right behind me. Well, when the narcs had found you, you got to move. Because they'll come back the next night and they'll sit there for a week or two until they get you or you give up. I learned a little bit because my dad didn't want me in that business. But I still quizzed him when we'd be fishing sometimes, and I'd quizzed him, and I learned some of the answers that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And when I learned those answers, then I was wide open. Papa Steele was about big as, it wasn't half as big as that ice cooler over there. And I worked down toward Clarksville on one or two little jobs down there. And it was pans, we called it, because it wasn't up in the big old damn pan. And you put everything in there, bring it up to a certain temperature, and in 3 days, when it clears back down, it's time to put a cap on it then and get the alcohol. Alcohol comes out first. And then you got slop shit comes out of it next, but you don't run that because you can't drink it. So I'd run out the decent liquor in it in a big tub, and I would take it and then run it into milk jugs. And I drank a little of it too. But that's what I'd do right then, and I'd haul it to Kirkwood, Georgia. and I had milk jugs, and I had a lady in on in Cleveland, Georgia, that was going to the dump every day and washing milk jugs for me. And then I found a connection where I could buy new ones. And then I started buying new jugs. And then I didn't have to wash them or nothing. All I had to do is take, lay it off of it, fill it full. Mm-hmm. And then I had an old Ford that was quicker than them lightning. The sumbitch was quick, had 429 in it. And I'd load that Ford slap full. I didn't have a front seat in it. I had a half a front seat in it. And then I had the whole, there wasn't no back seat, and there wasn't anything in there but milk jugs all the way to the top. Then we put a blanket over top of it and a couple of little teddy bears or something on top of it and go on down the road. Advertise a loaded Ford, a loaded car. You couldn't advertise it. You had to go down the road with the traffic, and you had to go down there. And then when I get to Kirkwood, I'd pull in this guy's garage, and he would turn the lights on and close the door, and we'd set it all out there in his garage. And he'd count the jugs, and he'd pay me for it.
What did you do to the car, though? I mean, what did you physically do to the car to make that happen?
Well, the first thing is, it's got to be damn fast. Not because you're not going to outrun anybody, but it's because you're carrying, I don't know what water weighs a gallon, but moonshine don't weigh any less.
What you never told me, though, was how you built up the rear, the suspension. What did you do, double up on the coils, on the suspension coils, or what did you do?
I didn't like coils because they bounce too much. Then you had to double shock it where it wouldn't bounce. If it bounces going down the road, they're going to pull your ass over and see what you're carrying anyway. So I didn't go that way. I just, what I did was I put some blocks under there, steel, and when it get down, set down on them damn blocks, all you had then was the car would be bouncing. I'd put shocks under it, and then if I needed to, I'd put some extra long leaf springs. I'd cut the damn hangers off the ends of them and put them on there, and I'd take them down to Clarksville to a machine shop, and he would straighten them for me. He'd put them in a press and bend them out straight. And when the car got loaded down to straight, it didn't go any lower. It would sit right there. And that would get you on down to where you was at. And of course, when you came back, you was running down near empty. And then I'd run down to Demorest, Georgia. And I had a dealer down there, I ran a grocery store, and I'd buy 60-pound bags of sugar. And I'd buy 6 or 8 or 10 of them, whatever I needed. And then I didn't drive them out to where the steel house was at. I lived in my house up there in my store. And I'd load up one on my shoulders, weighed 60 pounds, and every morning about daylight, I'd crack out across the road there and walk all the way over there and cut right across the hill and had a foot log down there to walk across the creek on. I'd walk on out through there and I'd see how stuff was. And if it was almost ready to run, I said, well, I got to work tonight. So I'd have to go buy bottles of propane gas, and I could buy it up in Clayton at a deal. And I'd go up there and buy it. I had a 63 Ford, and I was going up there to get some propane gas, and I got in a damn curve in the rain and crashed the shit out of it. I thought it killed me, but it didn't. I just crawled out and hid the bum bottles I had and called a wrecker, and he come pull my ass out. And I went back home.
You think those bottles are still there?
I don't know, I didn't go back. You couldn't have drug me up there with them coming on.
So you always watched your trail then. I mean, you always watched your
you
ass.
You got to know what's going on around you. You got to know how many people knows what you're doing. And you don't hire help. Now, if you hire help, help will tell on you. When a man grabs help and he's got a little traffic violation, he'll tell on your ass. and they'll be sitting there waiting on you.
So it was a one-man band. You did it all yourself then?
I damn near did it. Didn't have a big choice on it. I tried to hire a guy one time, and he run his mouth too much, and I beat the hell out of him with a goddamn stick and let him off. And I did. And he didn't know what the hell he's doing. He wouldn't do what I said do. And if I can't make money on a job like that, I don't need to be in the woods.
Yeah.
I don't need to be out there. I need to be down there flirting with some little old blonde-headed girl somewhere. Well, if they'd known I was doing it, there's no way I could avoid them, because they'll go over there and sit down and watch you through binoculars. Because I went on top of the mountain one time and went up there and I could see little sandwich bags stuck under a log and with their elbows rested on the glass while he's watching me work.
What do you do then? You just leave the location for a few days or what?
You're going to have to change the location because they'll be back. That's what they get paid for, is to stop illegal liquor being made. They want the government to make all of it and get all the money for it.
Well, what would they do to your steel if they found it then?
Oh,
well,
they did find it after a while, but they slipped in from the top of a mountain and they put some kind of little bottles of purple shit in it about that damn big. And when it went off, I was working on my mom's house and I thought the earth was coming to end.
How long was it before you went out there to check what they did then?
About 2 weeks. You wouldn't get my ass over there.
So you pretty much knew what happened then, I
guess. Oh, I didn't have a question in it. And after about 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I walked over there about daylight one morning, waited till daylight come, and then looked over and seen half of it hanging in the trees. And it pissed me off because They ruined my business. The son of a bitches. But it pissed me off because they ruined my damn business. And God, the government makes all the liquor and charges the hell out of us for it. And we can't make it, see? There was people starving to death down near it back then. I mean, there wasn't any money. You couldn't make any money. It was a hard life, Brady. There wasn't no easy life in it. Uh-huh. You was on needles and pins all the damn time.
Next to where I grew up, where they sold moonshine, and they didn't make it there, but they sold it there. People would, the makers would bring it, and it would be sold. And then if the law came, the guy who was sitting there, hanging out at the dump, would say, "Oh, I don't know who brought that here. It was somebody. It was in the trash. You know, it's not mine." That was my neighbor Pete Roberts, so I thought, oh, man. I'm sure he and this guy knew each other.
Well, Candace, I was very interested in the contradiction that you described with your father being a teetotaler, yet making moonshine. I just to bring it back to the Flannery story, that is in the opening salvo of the story, and of course, courses throughout her work. I wouldn't advise it, but I, looking from stills here in Andalusia, but I've heard tell there's some remnants of stills, and certainly we see evidence that Mrs. O'Connor shifted from a dairy farm to a beef farm, which was less labor. Apparently the cows weren't being milked. So once you don't milk your cows, you lose your asset. The help was apparently enthusiastically enjoying the products from some stills here in Andalusia.
So well, there's plenty of wooded area along the Oconee River, and I, many years ago, went to school there, and everybody hunts in Baldwin County. And I would think there would probably be moonshine stills in Baldwin County. Access to water by way of the Oconee River. Now, I don't know how they got it to where it was drinkable or whatever, but
I mean,
I've had some Burke County whiskey, but moonshine years ago from, but that's in the Midlands here in Georgia, and I don't know how that would compare to Appalachia.
Well, apparently the state of Georgia had the market share clear up into the 50s. A number of stills in the country, the majority of them were here in Georgia. I'm relatively new now, I've just been here 3 years, but I was fascinated to learn about the origins of NASCAR.
Right, and I meant to touch on that in my speech, and I'm sorry I didn't.
What are the origins of NASCAR?
Junior Johnson.
Stock car racing started with bootleggers hauling their stuff from the mountains into the city, and as he was talking about his car, and he had to have a certain kind of car, it had to be...
Ronald Reagan pardoned Junior Johnson because he went to jail for moonshining. And he was one of the early great stock car drivers of the set 50s and 60 years. He was my hero when I was a little boy. Because he was because of his race car driving, but I never knew the story. And who's the Bonfire of the Vanities? What's Tom Wolfe? What wrote an article on the last great American hero? You need to pull it up on the internet and. It was, he went to a stock car race in Bristol, and that was on about Junior Johnson as the last great American hero.
Yes.
And I think
NASCAR has its roots in moonshine. It all started with having the right kind of souped up car that wouldn't bounce, that you could take around curves and winding roads.
And the engine that where you could escape the feds
So I will now look at Moreland Avenue differently, because I've been told that Moreland Avenue, at least in South Atlanta, was cut through.
Well, Highway 9, which runs from Dahlonega all the way into Alpharetta and Sandy Springs, that was the Thunder Road of Georgia. That's where all the mountain people use that to get their stuff to the get their hooch to the city.
Another question. When they blew up that guy's still, how did they know that he wasn't going to be there?
Well, I mean, I guess they were there and they didn't see him there, but at the same time, they were not that... There was this cat and mouse game going on constantly between the feds and the moonshiners. So they might not have even cared if he had been there. But if, I mean, I'm just assuming they got there, they found this still that was unoccupied, that was, bubbling and doing its thing, but nobody was there, so they just...
There were pieces of it in the trees. That was...
Well,
well, it must have been Prohibition that created the moonshiner.
Well, the moonshiner actually started in the 1800s.
But that would have been for personal consumption, because there was no law against it then, was there?
Well, there were whiskey taxes in the
1700s. There were whiskey taxes at some point. I don't know exactly when.
Well, you have to know that I grew up in Iredell County, North Carolina, the home of many of the race car drivers, and next to Wilkes County, and there were probably stills on property that my family owned, and I have every reason to think that my great-grandfather profited from the industry, but he wasn't a moonshiner, I'm positive. But
the first time a moonshiner is described was, I think it was a Harper's article, is that right? From maybe the 1880s or something like that. And he describes a moonshiner, and the description in Harper's then fits the same guys now. He's talking about, you know, this old slouchy hat and these tattered, dirty clothes, and very socially awkward in the city, and, you know, sort of this feral character coming down out of the hills. And it was taxed. I don't know exactly how far back it was taxed, but the Scots-Irish people who settled Appalachia had their whiskey tradition, and they brought it with them, and they didn't want to pay the government any tax, and they saw it as a way to make a living. And it's been going on. I think the golden era for moonshine maybe was the 30s to the 50s, something like that. That was really the high time for it. And then you had Thunder Road, the movie Thunder Road that came out. And
Robert Mitchum.
Oh. Slew. I've watched Thunder Road like 10 times.
Mention of sugar. I always thought it was corn. I'm sure the Scots used barley or something else. Was there a range of ingredients, or sugar was more convenient by this time? Or
my dad used sugar and corn, and he said that corn, you wanted newly sprouted corn, and you wanted to use that, and that would give your whiskey a sort of a distinctive corn taste. Uh-huh. But his family operations used both sugar and corn. And they grew their own corn.
Any other questions? Yeah, so I want to know regionally if there was an organization that would get paid off in order to kind of divert the law from coming after them. Was there a lodge or something along those lines? Because my family used to do that where they came from. I don't know what it's like here.
Where are you from?
I'm not going to say where this is, but I will say all people are dead, so it's fine. But my grandpa and my great-grandpa, they were moonshiners, so they paid off the Masonic Lodge. Actually, my great-great-grandpa was supposed to pay off the lodge. She kept the money, and they got caught.
Oh, goodness. Wow.
So I just wonder if there's anything like that down here.
Well, there was a lot of corruption at every level, with the feds and the sheriff, and, you know, and the preachers. My dad was talking about how bad the preachers were to buy the shine to get revved up to deliver their fire and brimstone sermons. So sort of like bring it back to the novel, you know, there was not this. Nobody seemed conflicted about that, even though that these people were voting to keep everything dry. And
wasn't that mostly for economic reasons, though?
Wasn't what?
They voted to keep it dry so that they continued to make money.
That's what my dad said. That's what my dad said. Now, the county that I grew up in was dry.
I grew up in Gilmer, so
okay.
It was pretty dry, and mountains.
Yeah, my dad said that, they wanted it dry so they could be the only provider, right. So.
Mm-hmm. Why mason jars?
That's a very good question, and I don't know the answer to that.
Why mason jars? They're probably readily available from putting up, you know, pickles or beets or whatever other
canning your tomatoes. Yeah. And stuff.
I guess we know why Old Tarwater's first name is Mason now.
I was just going to ask that actually about Tarwater and Mason. If that was like a little sort of
That might have been an inside joke. I don't know.
Isn't the seal better? Is it that you worry about evaporation, the alcohol? I don't know. The seal is better on a nice and charred.
It might be. That's a good point.
Maybe it's just simply that you don't look suspicious when you buy big piles of Mason bars.
Because everybody puts on their
hands.
Right. So it's an easy cover. It's readily available.
Well, obviously, the milk jugs with this in the film, those are quickly consumed. It wasn't something you're going to have around the house for a while.
Yeah.
Offer it to your guests.
If I can add this, I started watching that series Moonshining that's on the Discovery Channel. And at first, and the mountain accents are so thick that they are just unintelligible, so they use subtitles. And I was watching it just getting very entertained and slapping my leg and saying, these are my people, you know. And then, but then they showed them getting just completely sloppy drunk on their own product and acting like fools. And at that point, I got embarrassed and thought, I feel like I'm watching a hillbilly minstrel show or something. You know, it started making me very uncomfortable. So I have my own conflicted attitudes toward moonshine, and I have imbibed too much of it at certain times. And like I said, it's wicked stuff.
Do you personally know anyone who's gone blind from a bad batch?
Not personally. I mean, I've heard of that happening, but I don't personally know anybody. There's a lot of quality control on the stuff that I know about.
Well, does anyone have any other questions or want to share their own moonshine story?
How do you go blind from moonshine? What?
Well, I think it has to do with some kind of chemicals getting into the...
Yeah, because it creates methanol when it's like being distilled, and so that's part of the stuff that they like take out and throw out. So if you don't take it all out, it can possibly cause blindness.
And unethical people run it through a radiator.
Right. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I remember my dad, who was a lawyer in Atlanta in the 70s, the early 70s, the days of the strip and that kind of thing. Sometimes he had clients who paid him in barter, and he was given several mason jugs of moonshine, and he told me not to touch it because it had been made in car radiators.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, he may have been saying that to scare, you know, 9-year-old me away from it, but what's this, Daddy?
He made a good point.
But
yeah,
but it also may have been really low-grade moonshine.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
So, I have a question about present-day moonshiners. You bought this bottle or jar that you brought with you. Does anybody actually make a living, or is this just like a hobby, fun kind of brewing your own beer at home kind of thing?
I wouldn't really categorize it as a hobbyist kind of pursuit. The person who sold me this, that's not their primary... That's not her primary source of income, but it's a substantial part of her income. Uh-huh. It's something that she does to pay the bills.
And it's untaxed.
And it's not taxed. So all the people, it's still very plentiful and easy to get. Everybody where I live knows at least one person who can get it for you. So it's not that uncommon, but it is something that people do. It's not as survivalist as it used to be, you know, where it was the only source of income. But it's like, it's not a hobby either. You know, they're not doing it. It's not a boutique kind of artisanal trend or anything.
So the real issue was originally had to do with the fact that whiskey was taxed.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
That started very early in terms of our country. It must have been a pretty substantial tax to be worth the
all the effort that went into it. It had to have been,
I was very interested in the fact that the gentleman who the film was about was weeping.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that really was kind of remarkable to me. they didn't talk about why he was weeping, but clearly this, he was, I mean, why do you think he was crying? Because he was really, at one point, he broke down.
Mourning a way of life?
Yeah.
You can make so much of different things for your own consumption. I remember we were once going to buy a kit to do one of the things. I don't remember. It wasn't beer, I'm sure. And I don't think it was wine, so it might have been white lightning of some sort. And so much you could make for your own personal consumption without any tax. It was very little. But I haven't really had any reason to be interested in the laws governing it. And I was curious if anybody knows what they are anymore. I mean, it's hardly profitable, I would think, today. It's really as available as alcohol is in every form. Why do people still make moonshine? It tastes better than anything else, I guess, if you have a taste for it.
That's a very good question. Why do people still do it? And I can't answer that. It still just has lore attached to it, and it still is. It's still stronger than anything you're going to find at the liquor store. Mm-hmm. If you want to get tore up in a matter of minutes, that's your best option.
You mean it? 100 proof or more?
Yes. 200. At least 100 proof.
Well, that's the illegal stuff. We have some legal stuff, and many of the distillers that we talk to, the legal distillers, they're currently chasing under Georgia law about how to get their product out, and there's a lot of sort of constraints on them, and I know there's a lobby trying to change that. But I would urge you all to please join us for a reception afterwards, and please know that Andalusia Farm is a nonprofit, and we're here open to the public Thursday through Sunday, 10 to 5. The exhibit that you're seeing here will be up through early September, and I'd urge you all to just come back when the room's not filled with chairs and just take some time to take a look at the artwork that went into the reissue of five of Flannery's books. And then also just to announce that we are going to be open every third Thursday for Thursdalusia. That's open mic. We'll be open till sunset, April through September. We did that last year, and it was a rave success. We have open mic, and everybody gets 5 minutes. You can read something, you can tell a poem, a story, a political rant, whatever. You'll get 5 minutes, and when your 5 minutes over, the hook will come in and be off. So, and you'll hear about all the events happening in Andalusia Farm and through our e-newsletter down on the farm. So I urge you, please give us your email. And if you want some of our fabulous direct mail, give us your snail mail as well. So thank you, Candace.